Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Hey, welcome back to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim here. Tim Wildman with Ed Battaglione.
Ed Battagliano?
That. Don Corleone.
Don Corleone.
Steve Paisley, Jordahl.
Good morning,
Steve.
Battaglio.
I just cut it short, you know. Yeah, that's what Trump
said.
We all
have nicknames. You guys have nicknames growing up?
Trump just caused.
Like, not mean ones?
I had a couple mean ones.
I had.
But most of my. In high school, I was VTag.
Yeah. My friends and I had nicknames all over. I was the Rock. I was Rock because I drove fast and I drove like a rocket.
Ah.
They said.
But one of the mean ones, which it was, you know. Next thing that happened was fisticuffs.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
But you know the slur for homosexuals?
Yes.
That got added to my name.
Your last name?
Yeah, last name.
Oh.
I don't want to mention the slur, you know.
No, it's just a bundle of words.
Did that leave scars?
No, it didn't. It's just it did on someone. If somebody said it, somebody got scars. Sometimes it was me, sometimes it was the other guy. But
I was going to say that Trump calls Governor DeSantis Sanctus now.
Yeah. Just Sanctus?
For short. Huh? Just Sanctus.
Listen, high school boys are basically idiots.
So I'm talking about a 78-year-old man.
I was going back to my high school
years. I'm sorry.
You're staying more current.
Yeah.
Hey, before we get started... let me let our listeners know this is National Collection Week for Operation Christmas Child. So encouraging you to pack your shoebox now with any standard size shoebox for Operation Christmas Child. Drop it off during this week. I think it goes till the 20th. Shoeboxes will be collected across the country at more than 4,500 drop-off locations. So if you're familiar with Operation Christmas Child and the purpose of the shoeboxes, any standard size shoebox will do. All you have to do to get more information about this is to go to SamaritansPurse.org/OCC. That stands for Operation Christmas Child. To learn more and to find a drop-off location near you, a lot of churches are doing the pickup for people. SamaritansPurse.org/OCC. You can find out what you put in it, how you pack it, that kind of thing, as well as some great testimonies about the impact these shoeboxes have in the lives of children all across the world. SamaritansPurse.org/OCC.
I don't know who had the idea for the shoebox.
I thought it was you. Don't you usually claim credit for good ideas?
No, my dad did when I had them.
In fact, that's such a joke around here because he did that. But whenever everyone has a good idea around here, one of us invariably says, "I was just thinking about that."
Yeah. Well, that's just a joke. My dad was a very humble man. In all sincerity, he was.
And you know what? He was such a visionary. Yeah. He probably was thinking about it before you.
Yeah. But there are times over our 30. Whatever it was, years in ministry. Of course, he was present. But I would go into his office and say, "Hey, Dad, I got this idea. We need to do this, that, or the other." And he would say, yeah, I was just thinking about that the other day. And I would think, I don't care. It's my idea. I wouldn't say it. This would be the cloud out from my head.
Yeah.
You know.
Yes,
No, don't tell me. You thought of it before I did because it was a great idea, and I wanted to come and you to say, "Son, I'm proud of you. That was a wonderful idea you have right there, and we're going to implement it."
Don't we? We all grew up wanting to hear that.
Well, you know, Tim, I was thinking about that the other day, that great idea you have. I was maybe like father, like son, right?
Yeah. Right.
Anyway,
in the summer of 1993, Samaritan's Purse President Franklin Graham received a call from a man in England asking if he'd be willing to fill shoeboxes with gifts for children in Eastern Europe. Franklin agreed, but figured Christmas was months away. He forgot about the promise until he received a call back around Thanksgiving asking about the gifts. So he asked his friend, the late Pastor Ross Rhodes of Calvary Church in Charlotte, to see if he could help him with a need. Sunday afterwards, Pastor Rhodes demonstrated for his Congress how to fill a shoebox, and the rest is history.
Do such investigative journalism so quick, Steve. Yeah.
I'm that good.
Go ahead. What's going on?
Well, I was just going to say, I had been thinking about doing those shoebox things back in 1992.
Right.
I had done something with it.
Long before Franklin Graham got the idea.
That's right.
From somebody else. Hey, listen, on a more serious note, and this is, did you guys see, there's a story yesterday.
Talking about shoeboxes.
Yeah. Shoeboxes, yeah.
Boxes.
This was out of Memphis, Tennessee. Help me, operator.
Memphis, Tennessee. It was a FedEx truck that was stopped at a red light.
Calling Memphis, Tennessee. That was the second line there.
Oh,
you see what I'm saying? See what I did there?
Okay,
in Memphis, which ironically is the international headquarters for FedEx, they have a semi-truck that's at an intersection, a FedEx delivery truck. It's got all kind of boxes and stuff in the back of it. Well, the guy is, this says a FedEx tractor trailer was blocked by several cars in Memphis intersection before dozens of people pillaged the back of the truck for packages, leaving boxes discarded all over the road during the brazen weekend theft. Steve, do you know, were the cars blocking the truck part of the hit job? Is that what happened?
That's what they think, yes. The people that blocked the intersection got out of the cars and started ransacking the truck.
Yeah, the reason I brought this up, I've never seen – there is 2 days ago there was a UPS driver in California, I think. Was it California? A UPS driver.
I remember seeing
delivered a package, walked up to the house, comes back, walking back to his truck.
It was a woman, I think.
A woman. And here are these guys going through the back of her UPS truck.
Yeah. The brazenness of the thievery now is takes your breath away. Because this looks like, and I don't know how bright these
You're
people are.
You're talking about the FedEx truck?
I'm talking about the FedEx truck in Memphis.
Memphis, yeah.
Okay, which, I'm sorry.
In a major intersection, it looks like.
It's starting to become a very dangerous place for anyone to go. Okay, but they're going to catch, unless these people thought ahead and remove their license plates, there's usually cameras that are going to catch the vehicles, and if these people are jumping in with boxes and speeding off, they're going to catch some of these folks, but the brazenness of this is just breathtaking.
Okay, the UPS driver was in Maryland.
Yeah.
Had her trucked. No, listen to this. Last week, a Maryland UPS driver had her truck stolen during a – this is different than the other UPS story – during a broad daylight armed carjacking as she was delivering packages. I'm going to tell you something. These companies like FedEx and UPS, they're going to start telling people we don't deliver to your neighborhood, and I'm sorry, because it's too dangerous.
Well, listen, we've all seen Westerns. Remember the stagecoaches that get held up? This is the same kind of brazenness, and they used to have to send people with the stagecoach to ride shotgun. That's where we get that.
That
expression comes from.
That's right.
You're going to ride. You're the passenger driving, helping the driver with the stagecoach. You're riding shotgun.
Because you're carrying a shotgun.
Because you're carrying a shotgun to protect it. That's what if they do deliver in the inner cities, they're going to have armed guards.
Yeah, because think about it. You know, these drivers are by themselves. Huh?
Yeah. And they have to get out and leave their vehicle.
They have to get out and leave their vehicle. And most of them, you know, if the weather's good enough, they don't even have their door closed.
Right.
They're riding with the door open so they make it easy to get in and out. Because
they expect to encounter only decent people.
And maybe a dog here and there.
Yeah. These people are not decent people. They're thieves.
If you were a FedEx or a UPS driver in these cities like Memphis, I'm not doing that.
No, because you know what? the prosecutors are going to say, look, they took two boxes. That's not worth our time.
That's right.
So
the cops are going to say, was anybody killed?
Right.
No.
Was it over X number of thousands of dollars? Then right. We're not going to prosecute. And furthermore, what's going to happen is that FedEx, UPS are going to say to their drivers, don't stop them. We don't want a lawsuit.
Oh, and I agree with that.
That's going to make these thieves even more brazen.
Yeah, because they know they're not going to be confronted by the driver. Because right. The driver, you don't want to. The driver's putting their life at risk.
Right. And most drivers are going to say, I'm not.
They're not going to do it anyway.
Right.
And they're not going to let them carry a weapon, right?
No.
So you're saying that they're just, and these thieves know this, so yes. It's open season.
After I said it, I realized, no, they're not going to let them go. Anybody ride shotgun.
No, I know that.
They may have to have a way to lock their truck while they're gone to deliver to a door, but then they're just going to assault the driver and say, open it up or else.
But you know who does carry weapons? These Loomis or whatever they're called. These
the like Brinks. They pick up the cash.
The cash at the banks. And other,
yep.
They do.
They do.
They have armed guards.
Right.
Why do they let them do that? They won't.
I guess the amount of money is so.
Well, also UPS and FedEx, for example, they don't want their drivers being. I'm assuming they're not armed.
No.
They don't want their drivers being armed because if they were to get in an altercation and they were in the wrong, or they
right,
they doesn't even matter if they're in the wrong in today's world.
Those Brinks truck drivers or Loomis, they're trained. They probably have enhanced carry permits. They have to go to the gun range.
Right. You know, I'm sure.
Yeah. You can't have all your drivers.
But what this will do is it'll make play. They'll just say FedEx or UPS, Steve will just say, you know what? We don't deliver in Memphis anymore. It's too dangerous. We don't deliver in Birmingham. We don't deliver in Washington, D.C.
Or you got to come down to the airport and pick up your package.
Which defeats the whole purpose.
That's right.
Same thing.
That's the same as U.S. mail. Or yeah. Even more inconvenient.
Yeah. I don't know what they're going to do because between now and Christmas, this is going to be an almost daily occurrence.
The mailmen don't have a choice, though.
Right. Somewhere in the country, because people are going to see this, and they're going to talk about it, and you're going to start seeing this everywhere between now and Christmas because they know it's Christmas presents for the most part that are in these trucks.
Yeah. Anyway, I was stunned at the brazenness of this, and I wondered, I'm talking about the FedEx 18-wheeler
yep.
in Memphis. I wondered, how in the world does that happen? You're only at a red light for, what, maybe 60 to 120 seconds?
Yeah, but that's why they blocked. 2 minutes? That's why they blocked it.
Okay, yeah. So this was a planned.
That's what I think. Yeah. Clearly.
And then the bottom of the article, it says the police were called, and they did catch a couple of these kids.
Yeah, there were young people.
Yeah.
Like Ed said, most of these big cities, nothing's done with them. They don't get punished. They get a slap on the wrist.
I'm just going to tell you, this goes back to what we've said. Some people may think this is just too convenient, an explanation, but you don't. If you don't have a dad in the home, you're going to have people. Listen, I did things that I wasn't supposed to when I was in high school, all right? But something like this, my dad would have killed me, all right? That's why
yeah,
I never.
These are all black kids who don't have dads. I'm just telling you, they're inner city black kids who don't have dads, never, and they don't have that luxury.
That's right.
Huh?
That is what's driving this. You know, I knew kids who might have pilfered some. I never stole anything from a store. Like some of my friends, yeah, I took a pack of M&Ms or something like that. I knew kids in high school who smoked pot. I never did any of those kinds of things because I knew if I got caught, I was dead.
Oh, sure.
I was dead. My dad would kill me. And that.
Also, you had an internal moral compass that was taught to you by your parents, right. Parents plural.
Right.
And reinforced at church, at school, in the community. That's no longer in existence in much of America, not just the inner city.
Right.
But it's a real problem. You know, people say, well, why would you mention the racial component? Because almost all these robberies are committed by black kids, black males between the ages of, say, 13 and 30.
So this
hold on, just let me finish. That demographic is what you see over and over and over and over and over again. Not so much the young ladies. So you have these high testosterone, you have males, high testosterone, very aggressive, right? Especially in that age category. And then they don't have fathers, they don't have at home. So they're left just to their own device. They join gangs, they drop out of school. This has nothing to do, here's why it's not racial. When people say, why do you bring up, that sounds like a race, you sound like a racist. No, it's not racial. It's environmental.
Right.
Okay? Because I know many, many black kids who are 12 to 30 years old who are wonderful,
right,
responsible kids. Guess what they have in common?
Right.
They have
mom and dad at home.
They have a mom and dad at home.
Right.
And so.
And the flip side is that in increasingly in white communities, you have absent dads, and
yeah,
you're starting to see the same,
yeah,
pathologies.
Right.
It's not, it has nothing to do with race.
It's just that the black community is 20 years ahead.
Right.
Because the Great Society of Lyndon Johnson, who set the course on destroying the black family because of the welfare dependency.
Yeah, because
and having multiple babies out of wedlock and getting paid for it.
The black community in this country up until the 60s with the Great Society.
Right.
They had thriving businesses, banks.
Yeah, the
kids,
family was intact.
Family was intact, and it began to be eroded by welfare, which wed the mother of the children to the government rather than,
yeah,
the father.
So you have a girl, 14, 15, 16 years old, and she gets pregnant, right, or pregnant more than once. Likelihood of they're going to drop out of school.
Right.
Well, they drop out of school, guess what they're going to be? They're going to be in poverty. Right?
That's
so it's a vicious cycle.
Right.
So it has nothing to do with inherently with somebody's ethnicity or their race.
Because you know who does better than any other ethnic group in this country?
The Asians?
Asians.
Yeah, and why is that? Their families are all intact.
Absolutely.
And they value
oriented.
Education.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a good point. So these big cities are so dangerous now, Steve. I mean, brazen criminal activity going on. And you combine that, Steve, with the George Soros-funded DAs, the defund the police movement, you have a recipe for disaster, and that's what we're seeing.
We are. These kids for years have been pumped in with the narrative that they are victims and that they are being oppressed, and they get angry and they get bitter, and then they act out. They think that this,
right,
is my payback. This is my reparations. White man's never going to give me cash, so this is what I'm taking, and they justify it, and that's why you're seeing it.
It's a breakdown in moral values.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you, these drivers, they're going to be told, we're not going to that neighborhood. Or
yep.
This neighborhood.
Or they're
going to
tell FedEx or UPS, I'm not going.
Right.
You send somebody,
get somebody else, or I'll quit.
I think and listen, black drivers are going to be just as reticent to go to these areas as anyone. The video you're talking about with the UPS driver, it was a black woman.
Right.
It's a hard-working
person. These criminals don't care.
Right. So they're not going to be any more protected than anybody else.
No. And they're very, think about how vulnerable you are. If you're a driver of a truck and you're the only one, and your doors are open.
Right.
You're driving around delivering packages. These thieves, if they wait for you, they know. Then you got the whole problem with in these big cities. I keep saying that. Sounds like I'm a big city racist. Can you be that?
You mean you're opposed to big city?
Yeah, whatever that is,
right,
whatever that term is. But, I mean, you got your porch thieves, pirates, right?
Right.
So they wait for the truck to deliver, and then they go steal it off the porch.
And just so everyone knows that we're not racist, most of the videos I see of the porch pirates are white people.
Right. Yeah.
So there is a widespread breakdown in morality,
yeah,
in our country. Most of the crystal meth addicts I see are white people. So.
Right.
We're just talking turkey. Everybody knows what's going on, and
right,
it's bad.
Yeah. All right, Steve. Next story.
Tensions rising on the Hill. Our members of Congress are have been quarreling, and when I say quarreling, I don't mean just like yelling at each other. This happened in a hearing yesterday, and it was between a union boss and between him and a senator. The senator is from Oklahoma, Mark Wayne Mullen. And the union boss was Sean O'Brien. They were having a debate, and they had – this was in the Committee on Education, Labor and Pension. Anyway, the two had crossed swords before in social media. They didn't like each other, and it came to a head here. So what you're going to hear is you're going to hear the interaction between the two. And
the pleasantries. Exchange.
The pleasantries between the two. And then you're going to hear Mark Wayne Mullen, I believe, explaining it. Oh, no, actually, that's the other. Yeah, this is just Mullen and the Teamster. Senator Mullen and Sean O'Brien getting into the hearing. They're talking about he started out talking about the tweets that were made against him. Go ahead. I'm sorry, cut three.
Pretends like he's self-made. What a clown. Fraud. Always has been. Always will be. Quit the tough guy act in these Senate hearings. You know where to find me. Any place, anytime, cowboy. Sir, this is a time, this is a place. If you want to run your mouth, we can be two consenting adults. We can finish it here.
Okay, that's fine. Perfect.
You want to do it now?
I'd love to do it right now.
Well, stand your butt up then.
You stand your butt up.
Oh, hold on. Big guy. Oh, stop it.
Is that your solution, every poll?
No, no, sit down. Sit down. Okay. You know, you're a United States Senator. Sit down.
Actively.
Oh, okay.
Sit down, please.
All right.
Can I respond, Mr. Chairman?
Hold it. Hold it. If we can't, no, I have the mic. I'm sorry.
This is what he said.
You'll have your time.
Okay.
Can I respond?
Oh, no, you can't. This is a hearing.
Bernie Sanders are making peace or trying to get between the two of them.
The first of that was the senator
reading
from Oklahoma reading what this guy who was sitting in front of them had been saying about him on the internet,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Like tweets or whatever.
Right.
So he was saying, say it to my face. And then it got into, you want to settle this? We'll settle this right now.
Right now, bud. Well, outside, man.
I do want to say that my grandkids would all tell me we don't say the B word. So anybody who was offended by a U.S. senator, I don't know if he's going to be offended by
stand your up.
Yeah, that's right. So
stand your rear end.
We do apologize if that was offensive to anyone.
You're allowed to say rear end?
Yeah, you can. Okay. I do what my grandkids tell
me. Stand your rear end up.
Yeah. So, listen, that's just testosterone speaking, and that's male ego.
Yeah.
So the senator should not have brought the tweet up because it left him nowhere else to go but to try to start a fight.
This is a union boss?
It's a union boss, but Senator is a former MMA fighter, so I think
the
union boss
he would have dumped the guy on his head, but he only was forced into that because he read the tweet. He got his dander up because this is what the guy tweeted.
Right, right.
He should have tweeted back, said it on the Senate floor. He should have tweeted back and said, come down to the gym, and we'll
meet me out in front of the Lincoln Memorial.
Yes,
let's get ready to rumble,
You know somebody about $1,000.
All right, thank you, Steve.
My pleasure,
Ed.
Yeah,
appreciate it. Thanks to Fred Jackson, Jan Markell, Brent Crayley, our producer, and we hope you have a wonderful Wednesday afternoon, and we'll see you back here tomorrow.